Hey guys, this is Justin Rohr from Restoration Church, and periodically we love to interview some folks from our community and hear how Jesus is bringing restoration in their life. And so this week is Dr. Patton Thompson. He is a friend of mine. He's a pulmonologist at Baptist Health here in Lexington, Kentucky. He's on the front lines of the battle with COVID-19 right now, and so we get to hear about how his faith is impacting that situation right now, and also just a little bit of his story and how he's found his identity in Christ and not his job. Just some really good stuff here. So you're going to enjoy this. Check it out. Here we go.
All right. What's up? Welcome.
Hello.
Everybody, this is Justin here, and this is my friend Patton, and wanted to start a series of, testimonies, stories from folks at Restoration that we can kind of hear how God's processing through their lives, how he's bringing restoration in their life. And I can't think of anybody better to start with than my good buddy Patton here. Him and Laura Marie and their kids are some of my closest friends. Not only that, he's a little relevant to the news right now, being a pulmonologist at Baptist Health. But Patton, tell us a little bit about yourself, family, job, all that sort of stuff. And tell us who you are.
Sure. Well, I'm a born and raised Kentuckian, originally from Pikeville. Lived there till went to college, went to Trancy. That's where I met my wife, Laura Marie, and we started dating then, and then went on to do all my medical training for the most part in Louisville. Laura Marie and I have been married now for 10 years. We have three kids, almost 7, 5, and 3, which is hard to believe. Oscar, Michael, Ann, and Bennett. Boy, girl, boy. So the quarantine has been a lot of fun, mainly for my wife. But I'm a pulmonologist, and so we see patients with lung conditions, but the main thing right now is that we've always been kind of split 50-50 pulmonary clinic and 50% ICU, and so this COVID stuff going on, that has definitely been in the front of our minds, and we've been preparing, and so far we've been pretty lucky in Kentucky, but yeah.
All those Get Lucky in Kentucky t-shirts we bought really worked for you. So you also, if I forgot to mention, you have two beautiful dogs.
I do.
You love them so much.
Yeah, it was great timing getting a new puppy right when we, we started the quarantine. So potty training with three kids at home has been a blast.
Yeah, I bet. So that's awesome, man. We're, we're obviously grateful for the work you do and putting yourself on the front lines of this. But going back before that, I mean, you're talking about studying medicine. Like, what made you want to get into medicine and just being a doctor? Kind of what drove you to that decision?
Yeah, I would say that whole drive to get into medicine fits really well into my testimony. I grew up in a small town, Pikeville, Kentucky, and I knew I'd always wanted to do something in the medical field. And the reason that I knew that was my grandfather was an internist, basically a primary care doctor in Pikeville. And all my life I grew up just seeing how much respect he carried. But most importantly, like, people were just so grateful all the time with how he helped them personally or helped a family member. And I just thought to myself, wow, he really makes a difference in these people's lives. I want to be able to do something like that someday. And he always instilled in me, and my parents did too, that if you want to get ahead in life, you need to get an education. They kind of drilled that into my brain that if you wanted to be self-sufficient, make a difference, you had to get a good education. So that was, I'd say, two drives, wanting to help and wanting to get a good education were the two big things that led me to medicine. But mainly just seeing the example of how, he could help people in tangible ways.
That's awesome.
Small town, I mean, everybody knows everybody, so, yeah. Never told him about one of my friends, he would ask, who's their parents, who's their grandparent, or, you know, and yeah, he would know the whole family, and it was just that kind of town.
Yeah. So that brought you to Transy and Lexington, where you met your wife, and when you go off to med school, you said in Louisville, right? For that?
Louisville, yeah. Yep, did all my training in Louisville. Still a Wildcats fan, though.
Yeah,
I haven't totally abandoned my roots.
I did not smite you in that town. So I know you guys spent some time in Brooklyn too during, was it residency doing that?
That was my intern year. So Laura Marie and I got engaged. Actually, the day I graduated medical school, I proposed to her, and then because at that point it was kind of like, well, I'm going to have to go to Brooklyn. We're either in this together or not. And so she said yes. And then, so she moved up there with me in the fall. And so we were up there for about a year and a half. And then I came back to Louisville and finished the rest of my training there.
Awesome. You know, when we talked about your story, many times, just me and you, and about, what being in the medical field and kind of your ambition in the workplace and how that impacted you spiritually and especially as you were preparing for this job. So talk a little bit about that, like kind of as you were going through the process of preparing to become a doctor, like what was going on in you spiritually that was kind of stirring there?
I would say that initially not much was going on spiritually. I think growing up, I kind of just accepted the cultural Christianity and didn't really kind of question anything, and kind of just went to church loosely, but didn't really have a personal relationship with God. I mean, if you had asked me if I were a Christian, I probably would have said yes. But I think, you know, looking back, that's just more of a cultural thing you felt like you had to say. I don't think I really had a true relationship with God. Then in college, like a lot of people, just kind of rebelled. That was at the bottom of my priority list. Started asking a lot of questions, trying to find answers. I would say that I never really became an atheist or anything like that, but I definitely had a lot of questions. You know, kind of felt maybe there was a creator, and I'm not really sure what he wants with us, and, you know, kind of an agnostic attitude, I guess, and just kind of put all the spiritual stuff on the back burner. Starting in medical school, as the demands increased, I really just poured, you know, ton of time into studying, as you would expect, but I did fairly well. And I mean, that was both good and bad. It was good because I felt like the stuff that I was learning was important and it was going to help me help people someday. But there was also this, you wouldn't know it outwardly. I don't think I'm an arrogant person or come off as arrogant. Maybe I do. I don't know. But there was definitely an inward pride that took way too much gratification in my performance in school and in like trying to do better than other people and, you know, performance, even as a clinical, you know, budding learning clinical physician. And it started to create a lot of anxiety. It was just sort of this nebulous, just tense feeling all the time at first. But it was like the better I did, the harder I pushed myself. The anxiety in a way pushed me to try harder and do more and succeed. But at the same time, I just kept setting more and more unrealistic expectations for myself. Yeah. So at some point that did come to a head. And that was kind of where my spiritual journey started.
So you said that's where your spiritual journey started, the recognizing the anxiety and kind of the taxing work of your ambition in your heart. Tell us how that, I mean, how did that push you towards kind of a spiritual awakening, if you will?
I would say that first year of medical school was probably the hardest because I lived in an apartment by myself. I wasn't used to being alone. I mean, used to, you know, college, just friends everywhere. Always had roommates and stuff. I am an only child, but you know, didn't have any siblings growing up. But those first 2 years of medical school is just, I mean, you're sitting in a chair reading for 10 or 12 hours a day. I mean, humans just aren't meant to live that way. And just all the pressure. And I was putting even more pressure on myself. There were plenty of people who were doing almost as good as I was, but were way more laid back about it and took more breaks and had a healthier attitude. But I remember distinctly just like I hadn't prayed in forever and just being extremely anxious one night as like this test week was approaching and just like laying on the couch in my apartment by myself and just like crying out to God and just distinctly feeling the presence of the Holy Spirit like comfort me and just kind of start to slowly convict me that this way of thinking was not sustainable. And so that was kind of the beginning of it. And I started, searching more. And I had a really good friend who was in my desk, like we have gross anatomy class, whatever, the first semester. They put you in groups of four and God put a person in my life, John Van Meter, who still a dear friend. I could call him any time, but he was a huge witness to me. And now when I, especially looking back on it, I see that he was constantly like nudging me and witnessing to me. And so I started picking up the Bible and reading more. I started reading books like Mere Christianity, started, you know, really searching for answers outside of just, being so achievement focused.
Yeah, that's awesome, yeah. Man. And one of the things we've talked about many times before as a person who, you know, deals with a lot of science and analytical things all the time, like one of the things I love about your brain is that you're not a, you're not a person that just kind of breezes over something. Like you really think about this stuff. Like you engage these topics and these things. Talk about that a little bit, about how you, as someone who has a profession in science that relies on these very real details, how you reconcile that with faith. I know a lot of folks think that that's at odds, but you know, we obviously do not believe that.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about that.
Gosh, I mean, that's a rabbit hole. I mean, just in my profession, I mean, I think if you just look at the complexity of the human body and you know, at a, especially at a molecular level and how just the more you know, the more you realize you don't know. I mean, even in my own field of pulmonary medicine, I mean, there's so much that we don't know. And, I guess my attitude when I first started getting into medicine was, there's an answer for everything. We can figure this out. We just got to put our mind to it. And you know, I mean, I think that can be a good thing as long as it's not taken to an extreme. I mean, I think there should be a drive, but at the same time, like we can treat a person in the ICU with a condition like COVID-19 pneumonia and treat 100 people the exact same way with whatever the best therapy is. And some people are going to make it and some people aren't. And so I think that that's just very humbling to realize that we are not in control of everything. God is ultimately in control. And so it's both humbling, but it's also relieving because I'm going to do the best job that I can with the tools that God makes available. But you know, at the end of the day, I mean, he's sovereign, he's in control. So for me, initially that was kind of scary to let go of that idea, but it actually has been, it was humbling initially. And now I find that very comforting to think about things that way.
Yeah.
I don't know if I answered your question.
No, that's great.
Correctly, but
no,
I don't know how you can look at the complexity of just more broadly, like the universe and if the Big Bang Theory is the best thing that science can come up with, I mean, if anything, to me, that points more towards a creator. You have the universe coming into existence from a single point in time. I mean, to me, that points to a creator.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So I think you can look at the big picture, and then you can also look at the molecular level too. And it's just I mean, there's no way I believe that could have happened by chance.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm with you there. Going back to, you know, just your job, one of the passions I know you have is with people who are in the workplace, about having a healthy, work and life balance in terms of faith and looking at our jobs from a healthy perspective spiritually. So
yeah,
a little bit about how you found that since those days of struggling with anxiety and crazy ambition and stuff like that in med school.
Well, I think that my example was one example of how that can manifest, but I think the root problem is your identity getting wrapped up in your profession or what you do. And that is a very easy thing to do, especially growing up in this culture, in this country, where it's like, you know, you're told at an early age, just, you know, whatever you set your mind to, you can do, you know, sky's the limit. Follow your dreams, all that kind of BS. That's not true. It's like, no, I can't be an NBA player, no matter how hard I try. So I think the root problem is too much of your identity being wrapped up in what you do for a living. And I think that was really the main problem. And I had kind of a second, you know, Holy Spirit kind of intervention. That was kind of the beginning I told you about, but I remember, I don't think I probably would have been able to receive this part of it at the time, but I was at a conference in fellowship training, and anxiety levels were high at that time too, maybe because I was getting close to being done and I was thinking about just having to, you know, be out of the training environment and be on my own. But, I just remember, going out to my car during one of the breaks and just spending some time in prayer, and God just like, he just felt the overwhelming presence of the Holy Spirit just convicting me, like, you know, this anxiety is all rooted in this subversive achievement pride, and, you know, your self-worth and identity doesn't depend on your performance. Your self-worth and identity depends on what I did for you on the cross. And just like understanding for the first time grace and how, you know, my self-worth and identity doesn't depend on how good of a doctor I am. I mean, I could have an injury or an illness and lose the ability to practice medicine tomorrow. And so if my self-worth and identity is wrapped up in that, that's a very fragile way to live.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, it's important to me, but it's not the most important thing anymore. But I think that can happen to anybody in any profession. It's if you know, most of your waking thoughts are about work and your task list related to work and how you can do work better, then too much of your identity is probably wrapped up in work.
Yeah. And you have a job that obviously is important, but I think that's true. Yeah, everybody, I mean, especially I can speak for ministry to say that's definitely in ministry, finding your identity in your quote unquote performance. And
yeah,
is a huge, huge issue for
probably very similar to medicine in that way. I mean, you know, you think you got to save everybody. You know what I mean? And you can't. I mean, it's, I think it's freeing to think about kind of the pressures. I mean, not that you're lazy or don't try hard, but God's the one that's in control of the situation, and you just do the best you can.
Yeah, totally, man. Well, let me shift gears. You are obviously on the front lines of what's impacting our entire world right now. And you get to see on a daily basis, in flesh what we only hear about on the news and whatnot. Sure. And as a follower of Jesus, how does your faith provide the lens through which you can kind of understand and deal with the pressures that you're facing at the given moment with COVID-19 and with just all the ramifications of that? How is your faith impacting the way you're seeing this?
I mean, that's a big question too, because then, you know, first of all, I would say right now, I think we're very lucky so far in Kentucky. We haven't seen, at least in our hospital, we haven't seen this massive surge. So this is, for us, it's not so far been like in New York City or Seattle situation. So we feel very blessed, very thankful for that. So the hospital is actually kind of eerily quiet, but the paranoia, fear levels are very high. So I think on a practical, like day-to-day basis, just not, you know, trying to be a witness, still trying to connect with people, not succumbing to excessive fear. But still, you know, you have to be reasonable and follow the recommendations. But I mean, that question goes to a whole nother larger level of like, how can a God allow something like this to happen? And that's a tough question. There's a lot smarter, you know, theologians and stuff out there that could answer that better than I could. But the only way I can wrap my mind around it is to realize that we still do live in a broken world, and the world is, you know, broken by sin, and that affects both the physical aspect of life, but also the mental and spiritual aspect of life. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, might try to put my hope in God's promise for the future, where he's going to restore all things, including the earth and our physical bodies.
Yeah.
I think just focusing on the hope for the future. And also, I mean, just historically, all pandemics, all epidemics do come to an end. It is going to come to an end at some point. It can't go on forever.
Yeah.
But in community, I think, even though we've not been able to gather really, since this has happened, we've got a strong community in our church, and we can text or call anytime, and doing our group Zoom meetings has been good, checking in with everybody. But I don't know. I think on a practical day-to-day level, I would say just trying not to give in to whatever the fear headline of the day is, and just trying to still connect with people and you know, be a positive witness at work. And I would say on a more like philosophical, theological level, just instead of focusing so much on the you know, death and destruction of this virus here and now, trying to focus more on God's promise for the future. Mm-hmm. But this is, we live in such a comfortable time up until now. I mean, this is not the first time there's been a calamity in human history, and it's going to happen again. It's just going to be something different. This is probably hopefully the big one for our generation.
Yeah.
No more, but.
Yeah. I've thought a lot about that in the sense that we've grown so comfortable with death has not been a part of our existence for a long time. And you know, expect people to die, and there's tragedy like cancer, and there's old age, but like we're one of the first cultures probably in human history where there's just not an expectation that you know, death could come at any time. And because of that, you see theologically the generations before us were always very much like, hey, we're thinking about eternity. We're thinking about, you know, what's mm-hmm. beyond just this brief moment. And I do think that that's a good course correction for us as believers, is to have an eternal focus and allow this. You don't want to focus on death, because death is not, you know, the central reality of our faith, but like eternity, like we are eternal beings, and we have a future, like you've talked about, of God bringing restoration to all things, as Jesus promised. And And that's been a hope for cultures and generations past, and it's an opportunity now for it to be a hope for us too. So,
yeah.
Tell me something here. We've talked about many different ways, but how do you think that we as followers of Jesus and as a church in general can best pray for and support people in the medical field right now?
It's a weird time right now. I mean, there's all this anticipation and fear, but the clinical reality of this big surge hasn't happened. So I would say the most important thing to pray about right now is just fear, the spirit of fear. I think it's everywhere. It's not just in the medical field. I knew there was one, nursing home worker from Kentucky who passed away. So just prayer for protection for the healthcare workers. I think we're lucky in the sense that if we do have a surge in Kentucky, we're hopefully by then gonna have enough, personal protective equipment and all that stuff. But fear is just the one that keeps coming up for me. I think that's the big thing. I mean, people are getting plenty of, donuts and cookies delivered to the ICU and that kind of thing. And I think the other thing that really disturbs me is, and it's just a matter of necessity, but just not just the no visitation policy. Yeah. I don't really think about it that much. When I'm doing my job, we're expected to call the family every day and the nurse calls too, but still, I could not imagine my wife or my dad or my mom being in the ICU on a ventilator and not being able to go in the building. That's super scary. And so I pray for the families that have to deal with that too.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I know we've said it, before, and I'm grateful for your story. I'm grateful for your friendship and definitely grateful to have somebody like you in the front lines of this. And just how many followers of Jesus that are nurses and doctors and respiratory therapists and folks right now that are on the front lines comforting people, and just thank God for that hope that we have such good people that have been put in this situation to bring literal and and when they can, spiritual healing in these situations. Mm-hmm. So we're grateful for you and grateful for your story, man. So no, we're praying for you and with you and supporting you, and we won't send you any more donuts and cookies.
No, please keep sending them.
Yes, kidding. I'm just kidding. So, all right, man. Well, I appreciate you. We will talk to you soon, man.
All right, buddy. Take care.
See ya.